Welcome back to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. With that said, I would like now like to introduce our first guest, who is a U.S. military veteran who was deported in August of 2003 after living in the United States for 45 years back to his nation of birth of Germany. Our guest is also a founder of a homeless charity in London, England. With that said, I'd like to introduce Rudy Richardson.
Hi, how are you?
Well, it's great to hear from you, Rudy. What happens is, I was reading through your what you've had to endure. What I'd like you to do first is, that could you go back to the fact that your father is an African-American GI and your mother being German. Could you tell the listening audience a little bit about that and then what you experienced prior to you being adopted by an American GI family?
Yes, sure. Well, you know, back in 1955, the environment in Germany, you know, was still a lot of racial hostility, and especially when black GIs started coming over after post-war Germany from the period of 1945 through 1955. And, you know, when they started, you know, having sex with German women, and then, you know, half black, half German kids were being born, the German government was at odds. They didn't know exactly what to do with us. And there was about, I'd say, 10,000 of us born during that period. And, you know, they sent us to, like, children's homes or the Catholic Church. They basically just ostracized us out of the community. But America heard of our plight, Ebony Magazine, and I think it's Chicago Defender, and they said, you know, and our name was called Brown Babies. They said brown babies are really having a bad time over in Germany, and if, you know, people are being stationed or that go over to Germany, if they would adopt them. And fortunately, you know, I was adopted by American parents. But prior to that, my mother, bless her heart, she, you know, she had her own set of issues. Our grandfather was half Jewish, and so he was taken to the concentration camp, meaning my mother and siblings, you know, had to live in a children's home until they were 17. Now, when my mom got out, she became a full-blown alcoholic and a prostitute, her and my aunt. And back then, you know, they had to do what they had to do to make ends meet. Anyway, my mom got busted several times, and then she was finally arrested and went to prison for 17 months, and that's where I was born. I was born in a German prison outside of Munich. And from there, you know, I was taken to a foster care home until I was 3 years old, and then I was, you know, adopted by American parents.
I also read somewhere where it talked about when you're in that foster care home that you were experiencing some sexual and physical abuse. Could you briefly talk about that?
Yes. Hold on. My fiance's coming upstairs, and I'm going to ask her to be quiet. She's just coming from work, so let me just tell her I'm on the radio. Hold on.
And this is Rudy Richardson we have on the line. He's from the London, England. So I just
okay. I'm sorry. Well, so go ahead. What was the question again?
Well, that's what I'd like to know is that, you know, the abuse that you suffered in your foster care, you know, up when you spent there when you're up to 3 years old. I read somewhere it talked about did you experience some sexual and physical abuse?
Yes, I did, and unfortunately, because you know, the trauma happened really early on in my life, the memories didn't start surfacing until about 30 years later. But even in between then, you know, I had, you know, difficulties. It was like a sleep disorder, and I had a lot of phobias. And I can remember, you know, having reoccurring dreams and suffocating. It was like that I, you know, somebody was trying to take my air. And I never really talked about these as a child, but they were very, very scary for me. But it wasn't until 30 years later that the memory started surfacing, and really I thought I was going crazy. You know, I didn't know you know, what to think. I was, you know.
Well, if you ever put this in a book there, Rudy, and you do a tour, I really hope that you end up here in the Vancouver area, because if you come to East Hastings, you're going to see an awful lot of people that are suffering, just as you're talking about, because the most of their addiction, people that are addicted here in the East Hastings area, in Vancouver, both the code in Canada, is it traces it right over to past abuse. It's a root cause. And, you know, having someone like you come out and talk right now, it is helping people tremendously. At the end of the interview, I want you to share some insight. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to go on to talk about the policies that the United States military had in regards to not allowing you to find out who your father was. Have you been able to find out since, arriving back in Germany?
No, well, you see, I found my biological mother when I was in prison in 1995 by an organization called Friends Outside. I was in California Men's Colony. That's a prison in California. And I didn't have anything but my mom's birth name and her birth date and where she was born. And fortunately, these people found my mother. And at first, I had gotten a letter. She didn't want any contact, so, you know, my heart fell to the ground. But 2 weeks later, I got this letter, and it said, "Dear Rudy, this is Renee and Connie. We're your brother and sister." And I almost fell to the floor. And from that point on, you know, my mom warmed up, and we started communicating. There was a language difference because I don't speak German. But that heartfelt thing when she said my name, my German name is Udo, and, you know, it went straight to my heart. Now, you know, my mom being a prostitute, was found out she married her pimp. There are nine of us. We all have different fathers, and I'm the only one that's half black, half German. I was able to meet six of my brothers and sisters. There's three that I haven't met for whatever particular reason. But when I asked my mom about my father, the only thing that she mentioned was that, you know, he was a GI. His name was George, and he had a hot temper or something like that. I'm like, okay. But I really tried to extract from her what his last name was, and she couldn't do that. And unfortunately, she died 4 months before I was deported of cirrhosis of the liver. So,
I'm sorry to hear about that. And also at the same time, when you were adopted by an American GI family and you're brought over to the United States, you know, when I talk to many people, a lot of people are asking me right off the bat, they're saying, well, his father was an American GI and he was adopted by an American GI family. Why isn't he American? Could you give us a little insight into, you know, why you were not, you know, made into given your American citizenship because of your birth father and because of the fact being adopted by an American GI family?
Well, that's a really good question. First of all, any kid that is fathered by an American GI, no matter if they're in Vietnam, Korea, Germany, wherever the armed forces went, America and the Department of Defense didn't take responsibility for those children, meaning that, you know, the fathers, they didn't pay child support, or there wasn't any parental whatever, and the ones that did want to do something, because I was born in Germany, I was adopted under the German courts. Okay, now, although my father was, you know, a 20-year veteran in the Army, and when he brought me and my sister over, they gave us a green card. I think our first port of call was New York Brooklyn Army Air Terminal, and we were given green cards, permanent residents. Now, my dad and mom didn't tell us we were adopted, didn't tell me I was adopted until I was 17. Now, they had an opportunity then to get our citizenship, they didn't want to let us know for whatever reason. But at the same time, there's some circumstance around, well, if American parents adopt a child from a country, and especially my dad being in the military, I don't know. I think there's just, you know, a missing equation in that. But having said that, I speak for thousands of people like me that was born on foreign soil, that was fathered by GIs, that the Army and the Department of Defense knew about, and I feel that they didn't take no responsibility in terms of parental obligations. And when it came to citizenship, you know, they certainly wasn't going to, you know, in other words, if we went to the embassy and even proved that our fathers were American, that still, we still wouldn't have anything coming in terms of a citizenship. So it was just really a heart, and it still is, it's very heart-wrenching, you know. I don't know what to say about that. I today still don't know where my home is at. And I believe that's one of the reasons why I founded the charity, because for me to feel at home is when I'm home with the homeless, because I feel such an intrinsic connection with them. But I feel like a man without a country. Germany didn't accept me simply because I was mixed race. America, obviously, because I wasn't a citizen. But they sure were quite happy to, you know, to let me join the army. But I feel like a man without a home, if that makes any sense. And well, I'm 55 years old while I'm saying this.
I'd like to quickly add there, Rudy, that what happens is, you know, I'm a Canadian Armed Forces veteran, and I served for almost 9 years, from 86 to 95, when I ran in 88. And what happens is, you know, the way I look at it, anyone who's done their service in the military, we were part of a gigantic brotherhood and sisterhood. And, you know, in my heart and soul, you are always part of that brotherhood and sisterhood. Some other veterans may not look at it that way, but what happens is I look upon it as it is my duty to be my brothers and sisters' keeper, and it is also my duty to protect the people. And you know what? That's what I'd like to share with you, Rudy. You know, when you joined the military at age 17, you were promised your U.S. citizenship. You know,
yes,
what
I was.
What I'd like to quickly to tell, you know, how did you feel 30 years afterwards, after you're honorably discharged from the military, how did you feel when you were arrested for the offense, the drug offense, and the small thievery stuff, and then all of a sudden they deported you over to Germany? You know, what did you feel like inside?
Well, I felt ripped apart, you know, and the reason why I was deported was because of an offense of petty theft. It wasn't a drug charge. But in California, well, you know, I was on crack cocaine then, and so how I would support my habit, I would steal out of stores. But if you do more than one petty theft, they have a law called petty with a prior, meaning that it's a felony offense. So really, I got deported, you know, for, I don't know what I stole. I think it was a coffee maker or something like that. But anyway, regardless of that, you know, when I was in that plane and the immigration officer was right beside me and he had that .45 under his coat, and as the plane banked and made like a circle or whatever, and it was Santa Monica Beach and I could see Los Angeles, you know, I cannot even explain the feeling. It was just very surreal, you know, but I knew, you know, it was over, you know, and that I just felt horrible. And then when I got off the plane, there were four German policemen waiting for me at the plane door. In fact, they called me first out of the plane, and then they interrogated me and said that, you know, they could retry me for the offense that I did in America. You know, it was just crazy. It was horrible. I was angry. I was angry, and I didn't think that my offense, you know, merited me being deported. What it is, the immigration laws changed because of the Oklahoma City bombing, meaning that anybody that had a permanent resident card, if they did, and it doesn't matter what crime they did, if they were incarcerated for over a year, they put it under a category called aggregated felony. Now, even the word aggregated doesn't really apply to the crime, but because of the wording, you know, they just manipulated the whole thing, and thousands of us were deported that, you know, we're living in the country all of our lives, that I have children and grandchildren, you know, that I haven't even seen. And being a veteran, I just felt it was, I'm still angry, really. However, I do accept responsibility for my actions. I mean, I'm recovered from drugs and alcohol. I have a few years clean and sober by the grace of God. But regardless, I do not think that my crime or my actions merited me being deported, being ripped away from my family, my father dying of cancer, that died while I was over here. I couldn't go back. You know, coming over to a country that I couldn't even speak the language. I'm really not happy at all.
What? I noticed that you've been sober now for 3.5 years, and Rudy,
Four years.
4 years now. Congratulations. I've been, sober from alcoholism for, you know, almost 9 years now.
Oh, that's great.
And you know what, Rudy, is that you've done an excellent job. I mean, you are a perfect example of how people can overcome past obstacles. And I know I hear the hurt in your voice, but, you know, you are a true inspirational beacon to look upon because, you know, when you were sent over to Germany, you were able to get your citizenship, and then you eventually headed over to London, England, where you formed your nonprofit organization, you know, and that in
yes.
itself, I mean, people, you know, you're a pure example of that. People can, we can rise out of nothing and we can return back to helping the people. And, you know, I really look forward to the day when your book is written because I really look forward to reading it. But, you know, what I want you to talk about is, you know, how are you able to overcome the obstacles in Germany and then basically head over to England where you are right now and form your nonprofit organization?
Well, you know, I think I call it fate or destiny because when I went back to Berlin, I lived in this men's home, Salvation Army men's home, and I was really, you know, struggling to stay clean and sober, and then I started going to therapy, and I was doing quite well. And what happened is one of the guys in the house, the social worker, came running in my room saying the guy was having a convulsion. So when I went in his room, he was having a convulsion, and there was a needle in his arm filled with heroin. He was turning blue. So my first reaction, first of all, was to get the needle out of his arm and, to give him, to try to resuscitate him. And, you know, he was turning blue. He was bleeding out of his nose and his mouth. And I was hollering to the social worker for some ice because when you know, you OD on heroin, you know, you want to put some ice in the groin area and under their arms. But anyway, she was upset herself. And so he was turning blue. And so, you know, I gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And the man died, you know, and that experience, I mean, seeing, you know, the guy dying and bleeding, it triggered the rest of those memories that happened to me 30 years ago in that children's home. And for a month, you know, all the memories started surfacing about my sexual abuse. And, I was really raw around the edges, and I wanted to come to London, you know, and even in Germany, they didn't want to give me my citizenship. You know, they wanted to find out, was my mother ever married again? And it was just really horrible. The bottom line, I as soon as I got, we call it an Ausweis, as soon as I got that, I came to London with not a dime in my pocket, not a dime. And they don't have missions over here like they do in the States for people that, you know, don't have a place to stay or any of that stuff. So I spent, you know, the first night at Heathrow Airport, and, you know, was homeless on the streets. And what happened is, Reginald, I had a spiritual experience that I can't explain. I was very angry at God, and I cried out to him, and I was just near a nervous breakdown. I mean, everything was just closing in. And I could remember it was on my birthday. I just had this out-of-body experience I can't explain. I just know that there was this warm air, and it circled me, and I started rising up, and I heard this voice. It said something to the fact, he has so many years, and then we're going to bring him home, anoint him. And I felt this oil being poured over my head. And as I opened my eyes, I seen this kingdom, and I was like led in a procession around this outer court. And there was this lady in the middle of the court. She kind of looked a lot like my mother, like they were going to present me something. But anyway, because of that experience, it was like God, you know, showed me a little bit of the other side. And I knew from that experience that, you know, I was called to do something, but at the same time, it turned my life around, and I am not the same person, you know. And thank God for that experience. I don't really know what it, maybe I'm crazy, I don't know, but you know what, I'm clean and sober today, and I have a conscious contact with God that I cannot explain.
What the story you were just talking about there, Rudy, you know, I've heard that so many times. You know, I've heard some of the most beautiful music ever, you know, and nothing, and no one's there when I'm hearing it. You know, some of my writing I've done as, you know, some people will call remote viewing. It's like I see it already written. I watch the movie being played out in front of my eyes. You know, so I understand fully what you're saying right there. But, you know, we only have a couple minutes left because we have to go on to the next interview. But what I'd like you to do is, you know, there's so many people that are suffering here in East Hastings here in Vancouver. You know, some people have called this one of the worst ghettos in North America. As James Green said, I really don't like using that term. Even James Green didn't like using it either. But, you know, that's basically what it is. So, can you leave some inspirational words for people that are suffering through addiction right now? You know, how can they face the inner demons within them and rise above it and realize that they are just as important as anyone else? And, you know, and there is a higher being out there who has all destined all of us to do things in our lives.
Yes. Well, I remember when I was in prison, I read this Further Down the Road, Less Traveled by Scott Peck. I don't know if you are familiar with him. He's an American psychiatrist. I believe for addicts such as myself and for people that are still suffering that, and Dr. Speck called it a sacred disease. And when I first read that, I said, well, what does he mean? What it means is that addicts and alcoholics always want to find, wanted to go back to Eden, wanted to find the kingdom of heaven, wanted to find that closeness with God. But what we did is we took the other door to find them. In other words, and that's all addiction is we were just trying to find God, but we used drugs and alcohol. And what I can say is that I believe that it gives us an opportunity. If I wasn't an addict or an alcoholic, I would not have went inside myself and really came to grips with my inner demons. So my addiction was really a blessing. I had no choice but to go inside myself and to face those demons. And even when my sexuality, I questioned my sexuality because of my abuse, and I didn't know who I was or what I was, and the loss and the feelings of abandonment and rejection and shame and a feeling different and a feeling marginalized. I was able to, you know, to find those demons, but I had to reach out for help. You know, God puts certain people in our path at the strangest times to usher us along. And I just want to say that there is a power inside of us that we were always scared of. Mandela talks about this. And that addicts and alcoholics, once we recover, it's like that scripture in the Bible, we're the salt of the earth, meaning we were able to go through those experiences of abuse, of trauma, of pain, of rejection, abandonment, and now, through God's grace, we're clean and sober. So that gives us more discerning eyes to be able to reach out and touch somebody that is still, you know, in the throes of addiction and alcoholism. It's like now we have that spiritual antennae. Not everybody has it. You know, like when you have seen somebody that's been through a similar experience, there's like an unspoken language. You just know that you know that you know. But you can overcome. I never, ever believed that I would be in a position that I am, not meaning a position as CEO or founder of Streetlights, but to wake up in the morning and to know that I'm clean and sober. And sometimes I just go around and touch the furniture and just say thank you, you know, because I still find it hard to believe that I really made it, you know, on the other side of the river, and I'm here to tell the tale, and that you can do it, and that we all are miracles, and I'm a living one, and so are you.
Yeah, you're sharing an amazing story, but I have to cut it short real quick because I have to go on to the next interview. But at the same time, you know, can you leave your website and any email you can be reached at? Because, you know, if anyone's listening right now that you are going through suffering addiction yourself and you want to reach out and you want to get talk to Rudy via the email to possibly Rudy might be able to give you some suggestions on how to be able to finally start, you know, facing your inner demons. Could you leave that information, Rudy?
Yes, my website is www.streetlights.org, and it's spelled streetlights.org. And my email is info@streetlights, streetlights.org. And yeah, please call me. I'd be more than happy to talk. And I just want to say, Reznor, I really appreciate, you know, you giving me this interview.
Well, it was a very great, extreme honor to bring you on, and you know, I'm going to bring you back on in the future because you're a member of the Banished Veterans. Apparently there's up to 3,000 U.S. veterans sitting in INS detention centers right now, waiting to get deported from the United States, with countless others like yourself and Hector and other members who've already been deported.
You know, hi, Hector.
we're part of a gigantic brotherhood and sisterhood. You know, some vets may not look at it that way, but I am a veteran who looks at it that way. Rudy, you are my elder brother, and same with Hector, he is my brother. And no one could ever take that from us. And I just want to say that to people. And what I want to say is that thank you so much for coming on there, Rudy. I'm going to have on my website, I will have a link over to Rudy's website. So if anyone out there listening wants to go to my website in the next couple of days to originaldangusarchy.com, I'll have Rudy's link on there. I'll also have a link over to the Banished Veterans website. Thank you again for coming on, Rudy. That was Rudy Richardson. This is Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Money Brown Bagger. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll go on to our next guest. And again, thank you so much for coming on, Rudy.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Cheers from London.